Well, we will look on avant-garde from some other perspective now, although a lot of things are linking in our space. Throughout the 20th century, Romanian composers often asked themselves how they might balance assimilation of European modernism and the definition of a distinct native voice. Communist musicology in the second half of the 20th century frequently and insistently spoke of a tension between the national and the universal, which it extended to the whole history of Romanian music. As is well known, the nationalist propaganda of the Communist Party demanded that the national character be emphasized in art, but in accessible forms, such as the rhapsodic. In this context, more sophisticated adaptations of folk music within compositional parameters connected to the West European avant-garde were viewed dimly. But it was precisely the search for dialogue between different traditions, East-West, oral, written, that fascinated many Romanian composers. George Enescu had been the first to put forward a convincing combination of the forms, genres, and techniques established in the European tradition, on the one hand, and a rendering of the oral folk tradition, on the other. Enescu rarely quotes folk melodies, but rather opts to recompose them by ear, intuitively, within a kind of imaginary folk tradition, which he expressed as in the folk character. Otherwise, the composer falls within a wave of interwar Romanian modernity, in which the musical world was filled with heated debate about whether it was possible to create a classic symphonic discourse based on Romanian folk themes. The modern concept of the national school began to take an increasingly clear shape through exploitation of the morphological components of oral music, deduced as a result of folk collections whose champions remain Bela Bartok and Constantin Brăiloiu, in traditional forms and genre, sonatas, symphonies, and so on. In the interwar period, the national style became a comparison between structural data drawn from peasant and urban folk music and from the monodic strain of Byzantine music on the one hand, and the data of European styles, neoclassicism, impressionism, and to a lesser extent, expressionism on the other. After a simplistic folk phase in the 50s, in conformity with the asperity of ideological censorship marked by socialist realism, there was increasingly frequent talk of refining, transfiguring folk sources in cultivated composition. Some composers worked within the Bucharest Institute of Folklore and had direct access to the recordings in its archives, taking part in expeditions to collect folk music from various regions of the country and transcribing melodies collected by others and recorded on magnetic tape. If Enescu had never been interested in studying folk music in a scientific manner of his fellow composer Bela Bartok, the young Romanian composers who made their debut in the late 50s made thoroughgoing studies of the mechanisms of traditional music. They quickly distanced themselves from the rhapsodic folk manner imposed by the socialist realist and, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, invented elaborate systems often proceeding from ideas drawn from Romanian or Byzantine traditional music. At the same time, they were interested in serialism, randomness, mathematical formalization of music, computer-generated music, spectralism, morphogenesis, and so on. From such areas of the avant-garde resulted reformulated heterophony as a new compositional technique in the work of Tiberiu Olah and Ștefan Niculescu, redimensioned folk ritual in the work of Miriam Marbe, and the computerized processing of traditional melodic materials, not only from Romania, but also from Tibet, Japan, Africa, and Java, in a new abstract music of Aurel Stroie. And this will be the four examples that I wish to propose you, of course, with some music too. And the first example will be Tiberiu Olah. For more than 40 years, Tiberiu Olah worked on filtering folk suggestions derived mainly from Transylvania into a melodic, harmonic, rhythmic, coloristic language through modern techniques, which from the late 50s placed him among the most significant proponents of the Romanian avant-garde. Many of his works also bear a highly personal and recognizable stamp thanks to the strongly pentatonic substratum of the melody. His first major success, Cantata to Old Chango Verses, avoids the cantata pattern in 56, demanded by socialist realism, and is rather a continuation of the Bartok-type cantata, a first step towards the definition of Olah's style. In the 60s, Olah proposed a cycle of five works whose model for essentialization and polishing of the folk motif was the sculpture of Constantin Brâncuși. We will hear the second of the pieces from this cycle, a sonata famous in the Romanian repertoire, the sonata for clarinet solo called The Magic Bird, Pasărea Măiastră, after a sculpture of Brâncuși. And well, it's a metaphor of the flight of this magic bird. In you will see in a monody model and specially dispersed monody based on folklore patterns. Work, but I will not tell you about all of them, that reveal constant reference to traditional music. Two more examples from his techniques, compositional techniques. After the pentatonic had been explored in every possible way in 20th century music, Debussy, Stravinsky, Bartok, Olah proposed that the component notes of the pentatonic mode be spread through space along different octaves. This technique leads to complex overlapping of voices, and from the harmonic standpoint, it combines with the major triad, which Olah likewise treats from a different perspective than tonality. Finally, the polyheterophony, often found as a compositional technique in the work of Olah, at least partly derives from the syntactic elements of traditional music. Olah describes acoustic interferences, a polyheterophony that resolves the problem of unity between horizontal and vertical dimensions through their reciprocal transformation into a multidimensional space. Polyheterophony, in fact, signifies a heterophony of heterophonies, which can also be found in the scores of classical composers, such as Mozart, at the level of the orchestration and only as a collateral phenomenon derived from harmony and counterpoint. How did Olah's colleague and friend Ștefan Niculescu arrive at heterophony? you will see when we will listen the fragment from Niculescu, you will also read a quote from him, and he states there about heterophony. In his famous Pensée la musique aujourd'hui, Pierre Boulez had already put forward a view of heterophony originating in the West European serialist tradition. Niculescu was familiar with this viewpoint, but it was in oral traditions that he found greater incentives to transform heterophony into a compositional syntax, as he calls it. In his third cantata, again a cantata from 64, Niculescu proposes for the first time an oscillation between mobile acoustic areas, which are dense in events, based on unity of time, textures, and static moments, prolonged drones. Constantly interested then in clarity, coherence, and formal logic, Niculescu went on to explore a new type of musical structure appropriate to heterophonic composition, synchrony. He says that what sonata meant for Domenico Scarlatti at the beginnings of the classical sonata, synchrony means for the heterophony syntax. The composer sets out from an understanding of heterophony in its most general sense, oscillation between the monovocal and the plurivocal state, alternation between unison and plurimelody. This may be likened to a sinusoidal form with note-venter alternation produced by the alternation of air in tubes, therefore a primordial acoustic phenomenon. There are a lot of works where he experiments these things, but we will hear something from 1975 called Eson, because Eson was a technique derived from the Byzantine music, and Niculescu was very interested in what he found in sacred Orthodox Romanian music. He combined, therefore, the technique of the drone of Eson with other syntactic categories. That is to say, and I'm sorry it will be complicated, but it's not so complicated. That is to say, the form will be generated by the temporal organization of the music, by the successiveness, monody, or simultaneity, meaning homophony, polyphony, heterophony, of the unfolding acoustic pattern in multiple possible combinations. Polyphony between heterophony and homophony, polyphony of heterophonies, heterophony of heterophonies, and so on. Niculescu's words, not mine. We may note that there is a similarity with Olach's polyheterophony, although the two composers travel different paths to reach it, and the musical results are not at all similar, as you will hear. archaic model may be used to describe the greater part of composer Miriam Marbe's work. She studies the musical stratum of certain rituals, birth, marriage, death, the new year, the solstice, etc., still preserved in villages in various regions of Romania into the 60s. Rituals dating from the pre-Christian period and adapted in time to the Byzantine Orthodox religion. The work that made her name in a period when choral composition mainly consisted of communist marches and patriotic hymns was a ritual for the earth's thirst for 7 or 40 voices, responsorial choir and percussion, written in 68. In that period, Olah, Niculescu, Marbe and Stroe had moved beyond their fascination for serial language and were exploring forms of personal expression within a radically modern area. For Marbe, the ritual reconstructed in the choral work meant finding a compositional idea that would place the generative poetic idea in the foreground. The traditional texts were drawn from the folk custom of Skaloyan, an invocation of rain in times of drought. Let's hear something from concert hall during the dramatic action until the audience find themselves in the middle. Anyway, it's more to say, but I will try to remain as short as possible. So I will just conclude the example from Marbe by saying that spontaneity and intuition become principal attributes of music by Marbe. She draws aleatory principles from the improvisational freedom of the folk song, which are at the confluence of the European avant-garde. Finally, just as Ștefan Niculescu discovered original impulses for the new Romanian music in the folk music, not only of his native land, but also Africa, Tibet, and so on, Aurel Stroe too explored the deeper strata of world traditional music. As early as Canto I, written in 67, the melodic driving force is an axis of 208 sounds, a welding of 14 melodies drawn from oral traditions, from the Byzantine one, a Transylvanian carol, a song of the Pueblos Indian tribe, just a few examples, a Japanese folk song, an American Indian song, an improvisation in the Indian Venkatamki model system, a Hebrew folk song, a Russian folk cadence, a Gregorian chant, and so on. Li Taipei, Chinese song. All these folk sources are transformed into original melodic versions according to the principle of finding ways to communicate between the various musical scales to which the melodies belong. At the beginnings of the 70s, Stroe had a revelation in Berlin, which was to mark his creative development throughout the decade. You will read everything about this in the quote, which will soon come. The first effect of this discovery seems to have been a chamber music piece called The Garden of Structures, where the trombone is a vehicle that achieves the transition between the system of natural harmonics and the tempered system. Stroe sets out from four procedures to define musical intervals, according to Daniel Lu. It was Daniel Lu he discovered in Berlin. The scale of proportions from Indian music, the scale of fifths found in old practice and Chinese musical theory, the tempered scale, West European musical thinking, and the scale of natural harmonics, a non-historic acoustic space. These apparently irreducible scales nonetheless communicate with each other over very limited fragments. I have an example of Stroe from his Concerto for Clarinet in 75, a composition that created a sort of school in the sense that other Romanian composers adopted its techniques and ideas. The world of multiphonics, or the procedure of mobile catalogues. These were catalogues of various microstructures whose order is left to the free choice of the performer, and they are made up of adapted or invented folk melodies. The entire concerto material is based on a Romanian carol collected by Bartok, with Stroe exploring its microtones. Capricci and Dragas, and it is based on the two totally different experience in playing violin, Paganini's Capriccios and the Ragas, the Indian Ragas, non-tempered. So this is another very good example of linking oral traditions and Western European ones. To what extent can such musics be described as national? Where is the Romanian imprint of a new music that lays claim to native oral sources? It exists at a visible level in music set to a text, as in the choral work by Miriam Marbe. In the case of the other scores described above, the composer's idea of appealing to the mechanisms of Romanian oral musics does not automatically lead to a sound that might be labeled as Romanian. So-called folk inspiration was viewed positively in the communist period. It was in accordance with the nationalist principles of the one-party state. But when required, it could become a welcome mask for experiments with the techniques of the West European avant-garde. By drawing on native musical traditions, composers were thereby covered when it came to the communist censors. The intelligence with which they transformed the components of folk music into mechanisms of avant-garde music was tolerated in the communist period, when society produced quite enough music to express the triumph of the nation, drawing on subjects from Romanian history and mythology, on folk adaptations accessible to listeners. But that is another story. Thank you.